Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Ranks FC. It's the third in our series of season previews ahead of 2023-24. And today we're looking at France's Ligue 1, the home of young talent, as they say in France. Today I'm joined by two very special guests. First up, I've got Mr. Peter Rutzler of The Athletic. Peter covers Fulham and PSG for The Athletic, and he's going to be talking to me about all things PSG in part one of this podcast. And then in part two, I'm going to be joined by Luke Entwistle, who is the senior editor of Get French Football News. He's going to be talking to me about the best of the rest. We're going to be asking if anybody can mount a title challenge. Marseille, can Lyon come back? Lille, Nice, Rennes. We're very excited about Rennes and Monaco as well. So without further ado, let's get stuck into France and let's start with Peter and PSG. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where we're starting off our Ligue 1 season preview at the very top of the table. We're going to be talking all things PSG in part one. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by The Athletic's very own Fulham and PSG reporter and a very good friend of mine, Mr. Peter Rutzler. How are you doing, mate?
I'm very good. Thank you, Jack. Very good. Very nice to be with you on in a different setting. Do you have like a different approach? Am I going to get a different voice from you? You're not wearing a different hat or anything, so.
No, there's no different hats. My hosting style tends to remain relatively consistent, so I don't think you're going to be in for any nasty surprises. But look, Pete, you've had an interesting time covering PSG since sort of February, March of last season. It's been a bit of a ride, I think, is probably the easiest way to say it. But this summer feels like a summer of renewal. And there's a lot of change afoot, and we'll come on to Mbappe. But I think more than any of it, a new manager has come in Luis Enrique. And for the first time in a little while, it feels like One, Luis Enrique has accepted an approach from a club because he feels that there's something there for him to work with. And he's kind of been out of work for a couple of years after the Spain job. And you kind of look at it and go, what is this? You know, what are you waiting for? And obviously this opportunity at PSG has come around. I think it's interesting in itself that he's taken the job.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. We had that long period where he was linked with quite a few of the top jobs in Europe. And I think it's quite, maybe it can be seen as a boost for PSG because every appointment is sort of a new start, a fresh start, a new era. But I suppose for them this summer, there's a lot more that's different about what they're doing and what has happened that suggests it actually might be that there's more to it than there would be. And I think one of those things is the fact that Luis Enrique has agreed to take the job. Clearly he feels enough is there. There's enough synergy with what he would want to do, with the control that he would like to have to build a team in the right way. He's spoken about building a project, having the right tools to do that. Now the first one, of course, is they've opened a new training ground at Poissy, which is west of Paris. I've lucky enough to have a walk around that, and it's incredible. I mean, compared to the Camp de Loge, it's another universe, really. So he has that there, but also the squad changes, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's quite a fair bit of renewal within the squad. I think there's some interesting elements to that squad where you'd think, are they going to suit what Luis Enrique wants to do? But in general, you can see that there's a page being turned. You know, Nasser Al-Khelaifi's come out and talked about, well, new start, you know, no one above the club. And I think that's partly why these few months that I've been covering the team have been so hectic and chaotic, because you had Lionel Messi, you know, having the book thrown at him for his unauthorized trip for missing training, where probably in the past it wouldn't have happened like that. Yeah. And of course, everything Kylian Mbappe, which I guess is the counterpoint. It's, you know, that's the big thing, isn't it? How can you have a fresh start when you've got one massive classic PSG drama, perhaps on a new scale altogether, going on at the same time? I think they would probably want to say, you know, this is the last one, you know, this is the point at which things change, but TBC, we will see. But evidently it was enough for Luis Enrique to take the job.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's been a clear out, right? So Icardi's gone. Obviously, he was away on loan last season, but he's gone for good. Lionel Messi's gone off to Inter Miami. Sergio Ramos has left the club as well. There is discussion potentially around the departure of Kylian Mbappe. And it looks as if that there are rumours that the Neymar might be following him out the exit door. Now, I can't see all of them going, if I'm honest. But I do think there's something in the fact that the players that have come in are a different kind of star. And I think that you look at Manuel Ugarte, I think he's a perfectly, perfectly good signing for them. You know, a young defensive midfielder capable of getting around the pitch, of being able to break up play at the base. It's something that they've really missed since, I think, Danilo decided that he's actually just now a centre-back. And they've kind of not ever really filled that hole. Lucas Hernandez comes in as a seasoned French international with a good career there at Bayern Munich for a time. Kanigan Lee comes in from Mallorca. I think that's a really exciting signing. The kind of young manager that, you know, young player that managers would like to work with and mould. Arnaud Tenas has come in to provide competition to Gigi Donnarumma in goal, and looks like maybe Keylor Navas will go out as a centre. It just feels like they're signing a different type of player. And maybe it's that level of star without being a superstar. And it feels like there's something moving in the water that suggests PSG are on a better trajectory.
Well, that's the line, I suppose. That's the narrative they want to build and create. And you're right. I think that is evidenced in the recruitment that they have done. You know, there was a lot of talk towards the end of the season. You know, it was a really, you know, grim end to last year, which is very surprising when you're talking about a title winner. And I know PSG win the league every year, but more or less they don't actually. They haven't won it as many times as Bayern have in the last decade. But the performances, the atmosphere around the club, and not just to do with the messy stuff, but the performances, it was so insipid. You just had the sense that there wasn't that buy-in. It really did feel like the peak of a team of individuals, the cliche, but it genuinely felt like that. what you have now is, and what you had in that period was, you know, we're gonna regenerate with younger players, French players. I don't think the French element has really been followed up so much. I think there are elements to it. You mentioned Lucas Hernandez, Ousmane Dembele is obviously pretty close now. And, you know, we've seen Warren Zaïre-Emery play quite a considerable role in pre-season. But there is a younger feel, definitely. The likes of Kangin Lee, Ugarte's not that young, admittedly, but, you know, he's still got his best years ahead of him.
22 seems pretty young. I give you the credit, the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah, so I'm getting confused with Lucas Hernandez in my mind here. all over the shop. But yeah, so you have that those players. Goncalo Ramos is close as well. And I think once you start to put these type of players in terms of their character profiles, you wouldn't normally necessarily associate them with what PSG have done in the past. And, you know, obviously we associate PSG with the big Galactico signing, the big name signings. But if you're going to change the dynamic within a dressing room, are you going to change the culture within an institution, then you're going to have to make signings like this. And I think also for Luis Enrique, it's quite important. I think we saw this with Spain, his desire to work with younger players,
yeah,
to instill his ideas for them to be more malleable. And I think that also will need to apply at PSG. And yeah, I think that's certainly been borne out. And they've, yeah, the other elements of their recruitment, I think, as well, is just the way in which they have to address the imbalances, because part of the problem last year was just how imbalanced their squad looked. You know, they set out at the start of the season with Christophe Galtier saying in his opening press conference, I'm going to play with a back three, and then don't bring in enough centre backs. And the knock-on effect of that was really evident when obviously we had the Champions League as injury struck. But then even at the other end of the pitch with Messi and Mbappe, they lacked a focal point and a nine. And it just, these were glaring holes. And I think they knew that these were holes, but this is PSG and success now or trouble. And that's going to be another element, because, you know, how much time will they allow a project change to take place? Because it's not like they haven't spent money.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, it leads us nicely onto the Mbappe thing, because it does make me laugh a little bit that we've been sitting here and Kylian Mbappe has spoken time and time again of his desire not to play as the number nine, or the pivot as he calls it, to actually play off, you know, a centre forward in the mould of the way that he gets to play off Olivier Giroud for France. And then suddenly the season where it all looks like it's, you know, going to end sourly for Kylian Mbappe, they bring in that number nine in Gonzalo Ramos. And it just, there is an element of kind of tragicomedy, I think, about all of it, in that if he had done this, if PSG had done this at the start of the window, maybe things would be completely different. And yet here we are once again, even with this new PSG, if you will.
Yeah, it's true. It is true. And I think, you know, the thing is with Mbappe, I mean, the numbers he was posting last season, and even Messi as well, the numbers were still fantastic. He still wasn't to his detriment, but quite clearly, and you see this with France, he's a kind of player that would thrive off a nine. And I also think the midfielders within the team will look a lot better when they're not having to compensate for those in front of them, i.e. Messi dropping into a far deeper role than leading the attack line, and the knock-on effect that had for their whole shape. It was all very muddled. But with Mbappe, yeah, it's, I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, Karim Benzema leaving Real Madrid and Madrid needing a goal scorer, and potentially there is a worry there that ship would sail. Obviously, that's whether Real Madrid would want to let Mbappe go, even after the difficulties they had. You know, last year, of course, when Mbappe signed his contract, Real Madrid were close and they were bitten hard by the fact that he didn't join them. And now, you know, relations have become very, very sour, and he obviously left out of the preseason tour of Japan and South Korea. He's training in the loft, as they call it in France, the bomb squad, as it's probably more easy to refer to here. And there's this very real standoff that at the moment doesn't seem like it's going to be resolved, at least the way the club want it to. You know, the club, for them, they don't want to lose Mbappe for free. That's their sort of red line. They have posited that he's always said that he wouldn't leave for free. But it's, you know, and they are convinced that he's already agreed to join Real Madrid next summer.
They might have a point.
And you know, they may have a point, but the flip side is that, you know, Mbappe is basically filling, you know, is honoring the contract that he signed, you know, and it goes back to that contract, which was a 2-year deal with an extension. He hung up, you know, the 2025 from the back of the shirt. It was actually to 2024, and only Mbappe could decide to extend it, and he decided he wouldn't extend it, and that's basically led PSG to this response. And I think also a lot of it is, you know, following on from how Messi was treated. Even at the time when Messi was suspended, it was, would Mbappe get treated this way? Would Mbappe have this? And in fairness, he has been treated the same way. Trying to put the club above players, and you know, it's, but fundamentally, the outcome is a consequence of everything that's gone before. You know, giving a contract to a player that is just ridiculously expensive, one that gave the power to the player.
It's a bizarre. I've never heard of anything like this in football, yeah. Or at least in European football. The idea that the player has the capacity to extend the contract but not the club is like bizarre.
Yeah. It is really unusual. And PSG may pay quite a heavy financial price for it. You know, I think the main concern is more is financial fair play and the extent of the contract, and not getting the fee. But for Mbappe, you know, he can play for that final season, whether he plays, let's see, but play for that final season, go for free, take the signing on bonus that could be put into a fee if they'd wanted to. And that's it. I mean, how this will play out is really interesting. He's not training this week with Luis Enrique's main group in Poissy. That means I cannot see him being involved against Lorient in the opening game of the season. Will that continue through August? What happens once the window shuts? Does Florentino Perez come to the table? I mean,
I don't really see why he would.
Why?
We had a discussion about this on one of our Postbox episodes on a Monday. We were talking about the idea that what happens if a player has signed a contract to play and they are training and not being selected by the manager or not being allowed to train with the senior group. And I think that in Mbappe's case, it's a particularly potent scenario because of the fact that there's a European Championship. Mm. At the end of next season, you get to that point and you go, at what point do the France Federation, if PSG stand by their line and they say, we are not including Kylian Mbappe in the squad this season, he has betrayed the club, or however they want to phrase it. I'm not saying that's the right thing, but I'm just, if that's how PSG posit the situation and they say, we are relegating him to play with the under 21s until the end of the season, unless he leaves in January. You'd imagine that someone at the France Football Federation is going, hang on, that's our best player and our best hope of winning the European Championships next year. We cannot have him sitting and rotting in the under 21s for a year because it's going to come back to bite us all. And it leaves this really bizarre situation on the table where if nobody comes in from Mbappe, what do they do?
It's not just that. There's the Olympics in France as well. You know, hometown Olympics, once in a generation thing. Mbappe will want to be involved in that. There's a state level element to it. And there was when he re-signed his contract with you know, Emmanuel Macron saying, you know, you should stick around, you know, be quite good for the French state. So there's a whole other level to it. And where it is really interesting, and we did a piece on this in The Athletic outlining the legal sort of situation, is because he's in the loft or the bomb squad, but under French, French sport law and French employment law, you know, Mbappe can't stay in the position he's in now, like training separately after September 1st. You know, clubs are allowed to have a bomb squad or a loft with players in it that you don't see as part of your plans until September 1st, till the end of the summer window. After that point, he has to be reintegrated and providing some other clauses, for example, like, you know, if there is a separate group, it has to be at least 10 players, they have to have all the same equipment, and it has to be justified on sporting reasons. So PSG will have to bring him back into the main group for training. That doesn't mean necessarily they'll have to play him, but it does change the dynamic somewhat once you have a player back in the group that you've made such a big deal about not wanting to be in your plans. How does that affect the group? How does Luis Enrique take that? How does he want to manage that? Is he going to be happy with a player of that ability that he can't use but is training every day.
I mean, it's worth in training, you'd imagine as well.
Well, yeah. How do the teammates feel about it? What happens to the dynamics within the group? I mean, it's not a scenario that you'd want at all. It's not conducive to success. It's not conducive for anyone. But the club would say, well, this is the line we have to take. You know, we've been betrayed here, and unfortunately, you know, he's going to have to pay the price for it. But it will be really interesting, particularly once we get to the end of the window and what they do. Because if PSG, you know, I mean, just to clarify, like if they kept him in the bomb squad going for the rest of the season or dropped him to the reserves or whatever, then Mbappe would have legal recourse to bring up with him. So it's, yeah.
No dramas at PSG this season.
No, it's going to be plain sailing. It's a new era. Done.
Absolutely. Just a word on Neymar, and then we'll come back to the positives, because I think there are some really big ones that I just want to touch on before we go. There have been reports today that Neymar has apparently decided that he wants to leave as well. Now, there are reports, obviously, that there are links to Ousmane Dembele. There were murmurs in the press and in the French press last week that Neymar was offered to Barcelona as a sort of loan deal as part of that. I don't necessarily buy any of that as being specifically true, but I think it's interesting that his name is being thrown around in this discourse.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, Neymar to Barcelona with what money is the obvious question. But Neymar's situation is interesting. You know, his contract, as far as I understand it, runs until 2027 now, and it's a good contract. You know, who's going to want to take him? that's the thing. Who's going to want to be able to take him from that contract? Whether PSG would want to keep him is the other element. You know, it's been 6 years of a bit like to Dembele, really. The parallels between the two are quite extraordinary, really, in terms of fitness and not basically being able to play to the level you'd want. I think with Neymar, we've seen that when he does play, he's been fantastic generally for PSG. Like when you actually look at the numbers and his contributions, there's no doubting his ability. Obviously, he's come back from ankle surgery, some quite serious surgery. Looked okay during preseason, got 90 minutes against Schomburg. But he's again a symbol of what's gone before. You know, he's part of that Galacticos era in inverted commas, and him moving on would also be fitting with what PSG are trying to do. And I think they wouldn't mind moving him on if his salary's as big as we know it to be, and how that impacts their financial fair play situation. So he's sort of a player that seemed to me is kind of stuck. I mean, back end of last season, there was the protest, of course, after Messi's suspension, and they spilled out to, you know, with fans, some fans going to his house in a little village called Bougival, which is near to the training ground, a really picturesque town where he's got a big house where Ronaldinho used to live in. And he was really shook up by that, by all accounts, you know, the chanting and the way that those protests unfurled. And it felt like, is that going to be a moment that goes, actually, it's going to force him out the door a little bit? But as with a lot of players at that level, and I mean, I guess it's similar with Mbappe, considering the money involved, there aren't many doors open to them. So even if he wanted to, I mean, we're looking at what, and you mentioned Barcelona, but it's so difficult to see that happening. You're looking at Saudi, you know, they did make a big offer for him at the start of the summer. Do they come in again with that? Does he want to go that way and give up what is quite a nice life in Paris? So like there's a lot of variables to that. And above all, what does Luis Enrique want to do? Is there going to be a rekindling of that, you know, brilliance of the treble winning team and that front three? Or is this a different time now, a different era? Is Neymar, you know, as we were talking about young players that will buy into what Luis Enrique will want to do, is Neymar that? So it's interesting. The reports are interesting, and I think they are reflective of a situation that no one's overly comfortable with at the moment. But also, to me, it looks like a situation that isn't necessarily going to change at this point, unless there are some magic money in Catalonia or some more real money in Saudi Arabia.
There's always a lever to pull. I've learned of the last couple of years. If nothing else, that's what I've got. Let's talk a little bit about the positives, because actually you look at this squad now and I really quite like the balance of it. And let's just keep Mbappe's name out of it for a little while. But what we've seen in pre-season, I think obviously we've seen a lot of different defensive lineups and a lot of different midfields, but actually the midfield rotations have been really interesting. Warren Zaire and Emery, you mentioned at the top, I think is one who could really have an explosion this season under Luis Enrique, and especially in these midfield threes that he seems to really favour, you know, this traditional kind of positionalism, if you will. But I think the Verratti, an interesting one in that obviously there was Saudi money potentially on the table for him as well, but that hasn't seemed to have gone through, and I think he'll actually enjoy playing under Enrique. And then you sort of look at someone like Ethan Mbappe, who's had an interesting kind of bop around in pre-season. But just generally, Carlos Soler and Fabian Ruiz have both played under Enrique at the Spanish international level. I just think he will love Vitinha, because Vitinha strikes me as the kind of player who will fit seamlessly into what Enrique wants to do, and did so at Porto in those sort of link-up roles. Is able to play in a two and a three at Porto. It was really interesting watching him develop there. And then you have Ugarte, who feels like he's going to be the sort of base six that works off this. And even if his passing game is a little bit weak, I think what he brings in off the ball positioning and that kind of ball recovery feels like a really nice balance. So I look at this midfield and I'm just sort of sitting here nodding, going, I think that's up there. You know, we talked a lot this summer about Real Madrid's midfield and why it should be one of the best in the world, and I think that it is top of that pile. But I don't think that this PSG midfield, we haven't even mentioned someone like Renato Sanches there, right, who hasn't quite featured because of these injuries, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. But when you look at that, you go, there aren't many midfielders on the planet better than this.
No, it is a strong midfield. And I did feel sorry for the central midfielders last year, going back to the points I mentioned before, just in terms of balance. You'd have Vitinha having to fill in up front in a centre forward role when Messi drops deep. You'd have Soler doing that. It's just rotations. It's just what happens in a team. But playing in that kind of system for balance. And it just lessened their game so much. And I think you're right. I completely agree in terms of tactically how well they sort of suit what Enrique wants to do, Luis Enrique wants to do. You've got with Luis Enrique, he quite likes his central midfielders to be a bit more box to box rather than just the creators. That suits the likes of Fabian Ruiz, that would suit Carlos Soler. I think where they still need to obviously strengthen an attack, and it didn't help that Kang and Lee's had a knock in pre-season, and you'd had Vitinha playing wide and because Carlos Soler playing wide as well. I know he can do that, but they're not natural roles for them. But in their actual positions, you've got, you know, even at the six, and Ugarte's the one that's like, oh, how's Luis Enrique going to do this? Because he's always had Busquets, basically, Barcelona and Spain, in his recent roles. Ugarte's not that, but you also have Verratti as an option, as a rotation, maybe. And that seems like a perfect position for him in certain games. I think we'll see more, as you say, from Vitinha. It just feels better balanced. Like, it feels like you're going to use players in the right way, in their right positions, what they're best equipped to do. You know, obviously the forward line still needs those numbers. Once Dembele comes through, that helps. Once Ramos comes through, that helps.
Yeah.
And then defensively as well, they with Skriniar coming in, adding a bit more depth. You know, Kimpembe's had his injury issues, but you've got him, Marquinhos, Danilo. For a team that has just felt so imbalanced, that no longer feels like such of an issue. So looking forward to seeing how they adapt and how his philosophy, you know, instills and how quickly they adapt to his style of play, because even someone like Lee, you know, a player who likes to drift in off the wing, can play on either side, is really good dribbler, it just feels like the right kind of fit. So let's see. I mean, there are the uncertainties. I think one of them before Ramos came in was, you know, what's he going to do with Asensio? Is a great player, evidently, but just Where's he best? You know, with Spain, he's playing as false nine. In preseason, he's playing as false nine. I'm thinking, surely not. He's not going to be doing that this season. But he's
just the World Cup.
He did. So let's see. But it's an option. This is the thing. It's an option. He can go with Asensio as a false nine, or he can go with a recognised nine and Gonzalo Ramos. He can play him off the right. He can play Lee off either flank. Vitinha can play advanced.
Yeah.
Dembele off either flank. You know, that's great, particularly for a coach who wants to play a positional system where it's all about rotation. So, yeah, there are some really positive signs from the squad building that they have done. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, on ball and off ball, I think that you're bringing, kind of touching it at the top, but it feels like the right kind of experience. Asensio, you know, an experienced player at the top level at this point, but with a relatively calm head. Luca Hernandez, an experienced player at this top level who, okay, all right, not as calm a head as Asensio, but doesn't feel like he's going to be, you know, a rash, brash presence in the changing room. I think that these are the things that you look at and you go, yeah, sensible business. Milan Skriniar, yes, okay, didn't end particularly well at Inter, but I think that this move has been courted for the last 2 years. So it's not like this is sort of news to anyone that he's come in here. And I imagine he'll bring a little sense of that leadership. And that all feels good to me. I suppose there's a little bit of a question over Gianni Donnarumma, Peter, in the fact that obviously Arno Tenas has come in. He was pretty good for Spain, I thought, across the course of the under-21 championships. Now, that's not a load of football, and he hasn't played pretty much any senior football. He's been knocking around at La Masia in Barcelona's B team. But he is a keeper that likes to play out from the back. He is a keeper comfortable with the ball at his feet. And those have been the questions asked over Donnarumma over the last year or so after he kind of took the gig full time off Keylor Navas. Where do you see it?
Yeah, it is really interesting with Donnarumma. You know, last season he was undisputed first choice. That's first time for a while. I think I wrote a piece today on PSG squad that he's the first keeper since Sirigu in 2012 to play 38 league appearances, which
is a stunning stat.
Which is, you know, quite surprising, I suppose. But even so, there were still those questions about, as you say, his ability on the ball. I don't think there's any doubt about his shot-stopping abilities. One of the best in the world at that, if not the best. It just feels a bit amplified with Luis Enrique coming in, because we know how much he values, obviously, a possession-based style, but also his goalkeepers being very good with their feet and with their distribution. I don't think Tenas comes in and changes, you know, the number one spot overnight. It's just a very interesting addition. A young player clearly will have the view of wanting to compete for the number one jersey, whose strengths lie with his feet, and how Donnarumma adapts, how much it sort of affects PSG. Because Donnarumma's, you know, he's not the worst in the world. Let's not make out that he's...
No, he's perfectly fine. He's just not... You wouldn't be like, oh, a really good ball-playing keeper.
Exactly. And how much will that matter to Luis Enrique? And I think that's just an area to watch this season. There's no doubt that Donnarumma will be number one this season. He's played pretty much all the preseason games. Keylor Navas, I don't think, will hang around either. So, like, that's kind of set in stone. But how it develops, what it looks like, how comfortable he is in those games will be really interesting. Really interesting.
Final question, Peter. Is there any world where you see PSG not winning the title this season? I know that's not always success in the French capital, and I think that's something that needs to be examined in further detail at some other point. But is there a world where you see them not winning the league? Because I don't think I can see one.
No, and that's a lot to do with also the strength of their rivals as well. I feel the changes that have happened at Lens are quite extensive, particularly losing Saka Fofana and Loïs Openda. Marseille have looked like they've done okay with their recruitment, but I just they're not on the same planet as PSG. So no is the answer, I don't think. That's you know, as you say, that's the bread and butter. What's interesting is how they play those games. What are the performances like? Are we going to get 6 months like we did at the back end? Well, at the start of 2023, which just felt very run of the mill. So let's see. Obviously, in Paris, Europe is what counts. But I do think as well, the way you're playing games, once things fall apart in Europe, does the season fall apart? And if it does, then your head's on the line if you're a coach. But that's where, you know, instilling a philosophy is supposed to help with that. So we shall see.
Can PSG win the Coupe de France for the first time in 3 years? The big questions that we're going to answer. We're going to be talking a little bit more about some of those rivals in part two, where I'm going to be joined by Get French Football News editor, senior editor, Luke Entwistle. So don't go anywhere. But for now, thank you so much, Mr. Peter Rutzler.
No, thank you for having me, Jack. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We'll be back after the break. Don't go anywhere.
The United States Border Patrol has exciting and rewarding career opportunities with the nation's largest law enforcement organization. Border Patrol agents enjoy great pay, outstanding federal benefits, and up to $20,000 in recruitment incentives for newly appointed agents. If you are looking for a way to serve something greater than yourself, consider the United States Border Patrol. Learn more online at cbp.gov/careers/USBP. That's cbp.gov/careers/USBP.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Welcome back to Ranks FC and our League Art season preview. I'm delighted to say that I am joined by Mr. Luke Entwistle, the senior editor of Get French Football News. Luke, it's a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me on.
All right, so I'm really excited about this. So we've done the PSG bit, and I think that angle is fine and lots of fun, and there's lots of things going on there. But I am excited to get into the weeds of this a little bit, because while so much of the coverage does surround PSG, I think there's so much entertainment in Ligue 1, and a little bit sometimes like the Bundesliga. I mean, it wasn't as tight in either league as perhaps a week I hoped it would be last year. But generally, I think that a lot of the fun comes in the kind of bits below the team that tend to run away with the title. And I'm excited to kind of work through some of the other interesting summers that have been had. So I think maybe the easy way to start things off is to say, which clubs have a shot at challenging for the title this season? And if not being a genuine title challenge, who's going to be in that big race for Europe?
So I think that there's going to be a slight drop off from Lens. I mean, Lens got so close to the title this like last season. It didn't really feel like it at times, but ultimately they finished just 1 point behind PSG. So that was actually very close from the race. As I say, it didn't feel like it, but it turns out it kind of was. And they run them really close, but they've lost a few players this year. Losapenda has left, Seko Fofana has left, Kevin Danso will stay. That's a big plus for them. But I think you can reasonably expect for them not to challenge to that degree again, especially since they will be competing in the Champions League. And okay, they've done some bits of business in the transfer window. Andy Diouf looks like a brilliant pickup, but I think that they'll be in the race for the European places, but I would see them dropping significantly back. That's my hunch for this season. So I think we can maybe discount Lens this season, but I think that Marseille should come back stronger, and I really like how Rennes are lining up this season. And they could be a bit of a surprise package, because I think that, I mean, can you call them a surprise package? They've got an incredible like arsenal of attacking wealth, but it just really wasn't very utilised last season. And they were probably the most disappointing side in terms of what you get on paper and then what you got when you sat down and watched them. There was a massive disparity there in terms of what you were expecting to get. So I think that they could do some special things this year, especially with Ludovic Blas and Zolofay coming in, like two very, very promising players. Still, I mean, Ludovic Blas not so young anymore, but Zolofay very much still a developing player. But two players that know Ligue 1 so, so well, and I think they'll really complement all of those kind of developing stars within that side. So I think that they could do something quite special. I'd back them for a top three. And then Marseille is the other interesting one. I mean, Igor Tudor's Marseille really tailed off towards the end of last season, but for the most part, they look pretty good. They've done some nice bits of business as well. And Ismaïla Sarr, it seems like that's a quite an intelligent pickup. Aubameyang, who knows what you're going to get from him. Imam Ndiaye from Sheffield United, that's a really nice purchase as well. And they've got a bit of experience in there now as well. I mean, Geoffrey Kondogbia, Renan Lodi, you know, these players have been around the European clubs. So they should bring something to this side. Marcelino, interesting choice for manager, but I think that he could surprise a few people, and he will kind of set a I don't know. He's going to go for the 4-4-2. It's going to be probably quite simple football in many ways, but it's going to be quite refined in its own way. So I think that he could also potentially challenge. I mean, we're talking about, are we talking about a title challenge? I don't fully know. I don't know how close anyone's going to get to PSG this season. I'm not sure what Peter said on PSG, but I feel as though Luis Enrique should bring a bit of sophistication to this PSG side, and what they've done alludes to a pretty dominant Ligue 1 campaign. But, you know, we're not going to get back into that. But I'd expect those two to be the two closest challenges. Of course, there is a bigger European fight this season because there are going to be four European Champions League places rather than the three. So that really brings a few other teams into play. As I say, I think Lens will drop back but still be in that race. Lille are a bit of a question mark because Paulo Fonseca, I thought by the end of the season, really got a handle on that side. And they were playing some really nice football. But there's not been the reinvestment this summer. And I think that that could be an issue for them. If you keep Jonathan David, you know, anything's possible. It looks like they might. So that's one to keep an eye on. Monaco, they need to, well, they've had a complete reboot basically this summer. Thiago Scuro coming in, replacing Paul Mitchell. Adi Hutto coming in, replacing, not Paul Mitchell, Philippe Clement. So they've had a complete reboot. They've not had massive spend. They have obviously got the disaster money to spend now, and we were speaking on Monday and they just had apparently a bid rejected for Fowler and Balogun, so they will splash a bit of cash. So let's see where they get. And also, they missed out on all European football last season. Easy calendar, reduced Ligue 1 season, 18 teams. You know, I think that they could do something given that they don't have any European football. And then you're getting to your kind of your nieces, and I mean, nieces is one that you could speak about for about 20 minutes if you wanted to, but I'm sure that that'll be a little bit too much. But Nice are an interesting topic. I mean, they have kind of pitted on Francesco Farioli. He works under Roberto De Zerbi at Sassuolo, and it's a huge bet. He's had one full season in Turkey, fifth place with, I think it's Alanyaspor. It's not, you know, there's not a large data set there to say that, yes, this guy can replicate what deserves to do to Bryson Hovland. So we'll see where that bet takes them. But there is a very concerted effort by everyone at that club, media department, hierarchy, to really lower expectations. I think that they're trying to lower expectations so that for once they can, you know, surpass them, because they certainly haven't done that for many, many years. Last year's an unmitigated disaster, I think you could fairly term it as, and they've now got rid of lots of those elements. I think that there are a couple of elements they could have kept. I mean, Ramsey, I think, ultimately wanted to go, but I think that by the end of the season, he kind of convinced people that he was, you know, he fit in this side and it was still useful at this level, but he has gone. And apart from that, the arrivals, there haven't been too many of them. Jeremy Boga, which one are you going to get? Are you going to get the Atalanta version, or are you going to get the Sassuolo version? And then you've got Morgan Sanson, who it feels like a shrewd buy, but, you know, wait and see. Lyon should be there. They could get absolutely pillaged for all of their youth products. Barcola, Lukeba, Cherki, even, who knows. I think a lot depends on that. I think that there's a lot of uncertainty around the club. The vibes, as it were, aren't good. Laurent Blanc being like sarcastic in post-match pre-season friendlies, joking that he wouldn't be in the position at the start of the season, I think is a pretty poor basis upon which to start your season. But who knows? There is talent in that side and they could do something. It just feels as though their season could just go one of two ways. And it could be another kind of mid-table finish for them. Who knows?
It feels like we've been saying who knows about Lyon for the last half a decade. And the same topics come up over and over again. It's this incredibly talented core coming through the academy. It's, you know, all of these players being in danger of being sold off. And then it's like, okay, this is a reset. We're going again. We're bringing in some new youngsters. I think Chaleta Sarr is a decent bit of business. You know, you bring in someone who I think will shine and seems to have found his feet a little bit. It didn't go brilliantly at Southampton, but I equally don't think that he was fully at fault for any of the mess that sort of surrounded him at various places. So you're looking at Lyon and we're having that conversation all over again. But I am intrigued by Marcelino at Marseille, to go back to the top of that list. And
I think that what we saw from him at Valencia when he won the Copa del Rey there with that 4-4-2, and then when he won and went the Supercopa with Athletic Club, again, it felt very much like the kind of, we are getting more out of these players than maybe the sum of their parts are worth. And I think that when you're going to get to that point, it's all very confusing. And I was really surprised no one picked him up last summer when he agreed to step down from Athletic Club. So to him to come in at Marseille in a period where they started last season so well, I think, if I remember correctly, it was their, you know, record points total after 10 games or 11 games in a Ligue 1 season. For them to tail off that way, just to go back to basics, feels like a pretty smart manoeuvre. And this squad does on paper look like it has all the component parts to be quite useful in a 4-4-2.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you say go back to basics, but it feels like they go back to basics at the start of every single season. And then something goes wrong along the way, you know, and it feels the same every season. I think that Marseille changes managers. It drives him a little bit crazy. I think that by the end of Tudor's reign, he completely lost it. Yeah. He said it, you know, when he left, you know, I'm exhausted and I'd rather take basically a year out than have another year at this club because it's just driven me to insanity. So let's see how Marcelino takes it. He, as I say, as you point out as well, I think that, you know, it's slightly petered out maybe at Athletic, but overall that was, you know, two very positive stints. And to come into Ligue 1 as a manager who has already built a reputation, because lots of managers come into Ligue 1 to build their reputation.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's come in...
Point, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. So, you know, for him to come in at this stage of his career, it feels like it's an appointment for now. It's an appointment to construct a squad in his image to challenge for the big trophies now, with this idea that maybe PSG won't be what they were, with, you know, Neymar apparently wanting to leave, with Mbappe on the way out, with Messi already having departed, with Verratti, this anchor, kind of, does he still have the legs in it? So I feel as though Marseille sniff, you know, they sense blood and they're going in for the kill with this appointment. It's, let's get an experienced manager who can handle this dressing room. We know he's a known quantity, and we're going to give him the players that he wants immediately, and we're going to try and construct something of a title charge. And, you know, failing that, maybe we can get the Coupe de France, and maybe we can do a bit better in Europe. So it feels very much as though they're prioritising the now. It doesn't feel like many projects do in Ligue 1, that it feels as though they're going to come to fruition in 3 or 4 years, and obviously not all of them do, and many of them, you know, it's lots of cycles, stopping, restarting. But with them, it feels as though it's for them, it's for the now, and I don't know, mostly, you know, It could bring a slightly tighter race than, you know, the Marseille managed last season. But I think that he could also do better in the cups, because he has done previously well in the cups. And I think that Marseille just desperately need a silverware, and I think that he could potentially bring it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's interesting. Obviously, the cup is something that's been sort of a little bit up in the air for a couple of years, right? It's not like in other countries, I suppose, where it feels like one of the big guns is always winning the cup. We've got to that point, I think, which is quite nice in France, where, you know, we have seen teams knock PSG out of the cup, and maybe that's to do with the fragility that PSG have shown in knockout competitions, fine. But I think it adds an extra dynamic to the season that perhaps you don't get quite as much elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously we're only down to one cup competition now. And, you know, so it's few and far between. The excitement last year in French football, truthfully, felt few and far between. But that classique in the Coupe de France where Marseille knocked out PSG and Malinowski with that long-range screamer, then Marseille getting knocked out against Annecy, these kind of freak results were just very, very exciting. And, of course, the last two seasons you've had Nantes, you know, a team that had been struggling at the bottom in the final, to lose winning it last year, not winning it the year before that. That final against Nice and a couple of years ago was one of the worst 90 minutes of football I've seen in the past decade. But, you know, bar that, it was an exciting and interesting club campaign, and it was the same last year. So you could maybe, I mean, it's hard to say. You can't say expect a surprise, can you, really? But it always feels as though these competitions are a little bit more open. And there's not really any rhyme or reason for that, because it's not as if Marseille, when they lost against Annecy, just kind of put in a B team. It's not as though PSG did that against Marseille either. It just it just didn't happen. And it's really hard to put your finger on why, but it makes it exciting. And at least for the last couple of years, as I say, I think that the majority of the excitement, or a lot of the excitement from French football, has come from the Coupe de France. So, you know, want a little bit more excitement in Ligue 1 this season, but also want the Coupe de France to still provide these great moments as it has done in recent years.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, I want to just briefly touch on Toulouse, actually, you know, speaking of it, because an incredible year for them as a newly promoted side. I mean, I don't think it gets much better than that, really, if we're being perfectly honest. But if you look at their window, obviously Branko van der Boomen has left and gone off to Ajax, and that feels like a big blow because of how important he felt to this team. But I do just think that you look at this and there have been other key, you know, key elements that they've managed to hang on to. And, you know, watch them a little bit in pre-season. I'm still convinced, you know, most people have go to bed thinking about random things. I go to bed most nights thinking that I'm wondering when Thijs de Linger is going to become a top six striker, because I believe that he has everything that he needs to do. And I think that some of the performances in pre-season have given me real hope that they might be able to kick on a little bit. Maybe not, you know, to a European spot. Obviously, they have European football, you know, via the cup, but not into a European squad in the league. But I just have a feeling that this team feel like they're on a good trajectory.
I'm a bit conflicted when it comes to lose this season, because, I mean, you mentioned he kept quite a few good players, but, you know, Branko van den Boomen was one that left. Also, Stijn Spierings, who went to Lons. I didn't mention him when I spoke about Lons, but that is also a really big blow. There's also the unknown quantity of the new manager coming in. I mean, I think that Philippe Montagnier's dismissal goes up there as maybe the harshest managerial, you know, decision I can't remember a harsher decision than that. And it seems as though basically it was based on data projections. It was, of course, not based on anything that he'd actually done, because what he'd done was brought the club up, stabilised him in Ligue 1, and won a Coupe de France in their first year back in Ligue 1. It's quite insane. And I felt a bit sorry for him, because if the final game of the season was Monaco versus Toulouse, at the Stade Louis-II, and I was there in the press box for that one, and there's loads of lovely storylines going on there. For Monaco, it was a disaster, but for Toulouse, you had Reece Healy making his comeback, scoring the last-minute winner. Didn't really mean anything, but it was a nice touch anyway. And then you had a very jovial Philippe Montagnier in the press conference post-match, you know, clearly oblivious to, you know, the bus that was about to hit him, basically. And a couple of weeks later, he's out of a job, and It felt a little bit like a season that felt, you know, that ended on a very, very sad note. So I don't know what to expect from Toulouse this season. I mean, they are renowned for their scouting. Obviously, they're very intelligent with their scouting. I know that people from their department have since left and gone on to bigger jobs, bigger and better things. But it feels like there is a project there that is built to last. So I wouldn't expect them necessarily to be relegated or to really struggle, but I do have doubts as to whether they will progress quite as much as they hope they will with their new manager. And having made such a divisive decision, I think that you really want to be seeing a big step forward. And I'm just not sure if we're going to see that manifest itself on the pitch this year. But yeah, wait and see. As you say, big, big departures. But I'm sure that this is a team that's got great capacity for renewal, and I'm sure it will renew itself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're going to move on to a little bit lower down the table in a second, but I just wanted to circle back round, because I know that Monaco is a club close to your heart and close to where you work. And so I kind of wanted to know what the uncertainty feels like there, because obviously there have been some big departures. And as you say, it feels like a bit of a clear out of some deadwood, and then obviously some big money moves. The Axel Disasi move to Chelsea feels like it's the first one of maybe to set a chain of events in motion. And so, like, you know, there's obviously some interesting, really interesting players in this Monaco side. I'm still waiting for Mo Camara for someone to realise quite how good he is. But it does feel that, you know, when we're kind of looking at this team, I'm just really uncertain as to what this team looks like, one, on Saturday when the league kicks off, or Friday, but two, on, you know, at the end of this transfer window, how many faces are going to be through the door? Because yes, not a lot of these players that have left were key parts of the team, but it does feel like there's a lot of loans gone back the other way. It feels like there's a couple of key elements that are now missing, and the incomings just feel a little bit slow on that regard.
Yeah, they are a little bit. So, I mean, the whole transfer window is blocked because, I mean, we talk about Axel Disasi leaving. We'll talk about Youssef Fofana potentially leaving. Both of them were planned departures. Monaco wanted to get them off the books this year. Their contracts were terminating in 2025 and they wanted to cash in now. This was a strategy of the club and it was very much planned. And when it didn't happen at the start of the window, as they hoped, as they planned, potentially due to their awful, you know, end to last season, which I think in the eyes of some clubs maybe diminished their value or maybe put them down on their list of priorities. They just didn't garner the interest that Monaco thought they would, at least not straight away. So Disasi leaving, although on paper he has said this makes them a lot weaker. Yeah, I mean, it does. But it was also part of the plan.
Yeah.
Same with Fofana. If that comes off, also part of the plan. I mean, they've got Mohamed Salah soon from Southampton. They're hoping to get Tosin Adarabayo in from Fulham. They're hoping to get Denis Sakaria in from Juventus. So there are players to come in to replace, but it's all quite slow because it's all based on these departures that they've been, well, the Disasi departure is probably as lucrative as they could have hoped for in the circumstances. Whether they'll get anything close to that fee for Fofana is another thing, but it's all about getting the money in to basically reboot to get the new cycle going, because this is a new cycle. I mean, it started ending last summer. I mean, the Monaco project was based on two brilliant duos. It was based on Tchouaméni, Fofana, Badiashile, you know, Disasi, and obviously the midfield duo got torn apart last season, and then the Badiashile departure in the middle of the season kind of ended things quite, you know, between those two as well. So it, you know, the heart of the project was kind of ripped out within the space of about 6 months.
Yeah.
And you then need to rebuild. You're right, there are loads of other great players, you know, Vanderson, probably not for this summer, but almost certainly for next summer will be a, you know, a real hot target for, you know, Europe's league. Yeah. Mohamed Kamara, you speak about, you know, he only joined last summer, had an incredible start and then really tailed off. I think there are some personal mitigating factors in there from stories in French media, but I think you can expect him to bounce back in a big, big way this summer. And, you know, he might be another player who you talk about leaving again next year. This is the thing with Monaco. I mean, I speak about the uncertainty, and Mitchell's been there since 2020. Schoolrow's coming in. He's come from Red Bull Bragantino. He doesn't necessarily, I mean, he has, because he's part of the Red Bull system, a good knowledge of the European system. However, he is coming from Brazil and he will need time to, you know, get to know his new environment. Adi Hütter is an interesting appointment. His stock has certainly decreased after that spell with Borussia Mönchengladbach, though he did kind of hit out at the Bundesliga side in his press conference when he arrived at Monaco, basically saying that I was promised money. I came in, there was no money. And the quality and style of football that we proposed was not what I want. So he did kind of, you know, go in on Borussia Mönchengladbach a bit. So let's see if he can bounce back. But the problem is, or not so much a problem, but the project is at Monaco is that you develop players in a cycle and then you sell them all and then you need to renew. And, you know, that's contingent
and so on
upon,
and so forth, yeah.
And so on and so forth. And that's contingent upon all elements of the club working perfectly. So from the academy, which does, because so many come through, and the recruitment all being right most years so that you can revitalize this team each time. And I think that last season, I think maybe a couple of missteps in the transfer market to Kumi Minamino didn't happen, you know, that didn't go as people planned. There's a lot of cautious optimism. Does that make any sense? There's cautious optimism at the club that he will bounce back actually this year, that last year was a blip and that we're going to see the real Minamino. So let's see on that one. That could be an interesting one to follow. But yeah, there's a couple of players, you know, Malik Sarkman on loan from Chelsea. That was a disaster. There were just a few too many issues like that meant that they fell just short of the objectives. And let's be honest, they were kind of on course for those objectives. It was just those last 10 games. I think they lost 8 of the last 10. And if you want to sustain a Champions League or a European challenge, I mean, that's going to stop it dead in its tracks. And it did. And, you know, they missed out on the last day. But maybe this cycle of European football can be a bit of a blessing in disguise for them. But, yeah, lots of unknowns there. I think there may be potentially the biggest unknown quantity this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you get Minamino and Kamara playing the Red Bull way under a Red Bull manager, then
things could be very, very exciting at Monaco, I think. So it's an interesting one to keep an eye on at the very least. Let's go down to the other end of the table, Luke, because obviously last year we saw four clubs relegated. Even then, and I don't mean this in a particularly disparaging manner, but even then it felt a bit like not enough because there was so much of a scrap at the bottom for survival towards the end. And it feels like a couple of these teams survived. And you look at them going, I don't know how you managed that. I have absolutely no idea how you've managed to get out of jail there. This season, there's only two automatic relegation spots and then this new playoff, which is going to be played against the winners of the semi-final in Ligue 2. So it all becomes a little bit more... Well, I suppose a bit more like the Bundesliga, basically, is the way that we're looking at it. But generally, how do you feel about the bottom? And is it going to be another sort of, you know, fight to the base? Or is this going to be a more of a lively scrap for survival?
I think that there are some, I don't know, it's really hard to say this year because I think that Metz and Love have, You don't know what you're going to get here. I mean, going in some kind of individually, I mean, we were speaking a little bit before, but Mets have some incredible individual talent that is way above the standard of the club. I mean, their Georgian striker, George Nikitadze, is an incredible player that I still and keep saying can easily play for any of, you know, the top half teams in the Premier League, potentially in the top six, not as a starter. But he is an elite level striker, or could become an elite level striker. If he stays, I think that Mets season looks completely different to how it looks, you know, if they don't keep him. I think if they don't keep him and a couple of their other assets, I think that they're going to have a really difficult season. I mean, I remember watching them under Antonetti, and it was difficult to watch. It wasn't good football. I mean, Antonetti's known for basically being the Sam Allardyce of Ligue 1 and just basically playing the unattractive football that maybe will keep them up. But it didn't keep them up, and it was atrocious to watch. So it was the worst of all worlds, and it felt as though the fans hated him. He hated the fans. It was very turbulent. It was dreadful to watch, but they've really bounced back. Not with Antonetti, must be said, but they've really bounced back, and they could do something this season, as I say, if they keep their assets. And then Love, you look at them on paper and you just think that they're absolute relegation fodder. But what that's not appreciated is just how good they were in Ligue 2 last season. I mean, in the season that you had Metz, you had Bordeaux, you had Saint-Étienne, two fallen giants, but, you know, still with some really, you know, some really good players still in there, both Saint-Étienne and Bordeaux, it has to be said. But then to blow the competition away, and I think they only lost one game before the last three games of the season, something insane like that, I think is... You can't underestimate that, and you have to kind of look beyond the team sheet and say something else is going on here, because something else clearly is going on. And Mathieu Bodmer, an interesting character, their sporting director, who at least at the start of last season maybe still does live in the club stadium, did an interesting interview with L'Équipe saying he watches, I think, a minimum of 54 games of football every week. Very interesting character, completely devoted, absolutely loves it. And he just pulled off an incredible transfer window on a shoestring budget, brought in all those players, and they all performed. And they were comfortably the best side in Ligue 2. And then you've got, they've added to that this season. You know, I look through their list of arrivals, and there's nothing that stands out at all in there, truthfully. But you just know that a few of them probably will hit. To what extent is a question, you know, to the extent that they can be clear of relegation, that's another question. But I think there are still issues, notably at FC Nantes. I mean, this is a side that, as we said, won the Coupe de France 2 years ago, were playing in the knockout stages of the Europa League against Juventus last year, but only just missed out on relegation on the last day of the season. And they have made this cop-out, I'd say, decision to stay with Pierre Aristoy, who basically masterminded this too kind, but... orchestrated feels too kind as well, but also just kind of did manage to keep
survival.
Fell into survival on the final day of the season. They were playing against Auxerre. I believe it was Angers or Auxerre, but they were playing against basically a team that had already been relegated. And
it was Angers. It
was Angers. Yeah, I mean, long since relegated, and he keeps them up on the last day of the season. I think it was 2-0. I mean, if you're not beating Angers 2-0. Last season, what's going wrong kind of thing. And that narrowly kept them up. I don't know. He's not really proved anything yet this could be another disastrous start to the season, and then trying to make up for that in the second half of the season, they could stay up. But I think that once again, they will be in big, big trouble. I think those are the three that, and Brest, who every year I tip for relegation, but it doesn't. Well, it doesn't always happen. I was dead certain they'd get relegated last season. And somehow they kind of stayed up. So they had a few interesting games for us last season. Sometimes you're just like, where's this team been all season? And then next season, you know, the next match, it's the Brest that you've seen for 90% of the season again. But they just about stayed up as well. And I think those four will be in the mix. In what order is the question, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think you're looking at this Nantes side and especially what they did over the transfer window. And you're thinking, okay, right, there's some money gone out. And then you realise that that money is on loanees from last year coming back in. I think Pierre Gabriel's a really interesting one, is the only thing I will say. I'm not sure if it's one that's going to make a difference in terms of surviving, but I think he's an interesting player coming in from Mainz. So that's about it. And then I think that's the problem with it. There's nothing on here that makes me feel in any way like not might even be anywhere near exactly where they were last year. And that was very nearly not good enough, you know.
And of course, no Blas is a big one. Pedro Quiroval is a very important player for them, but I don't know. I don't know how long he stays there, because he's clearly better than that club. If someone comes in for him now or in January, is maybe another matter. But it feels as though their midfield, Quiroval, Sissoko, just, you know, that was just kind of the difference, I think, over the course of the season. And he got rushed back to basically fighting in that relegation battle right towards the end, Quiroval. So I don't know currently if they have enough, but Quiroval in midfield is an important element, and he'll have to be with them throughout the season and perform well throughout the season, I think, if they're gonna stay up, basically.
Absolutely. Well, Luke, thank you so much for coming on Ranks today. It's been a real pleasure having you on. Where can our listeners find you?
So, yeah, I'm the senior editor at GFFN, so I'm doing kind of features and news, everything there. Monaco Life as well, covering everything AS Monaco. And then on the Beaujeu podcast, that's the official Ligue 1 podcast. And I'm also starting a role at Ligue1.com, so I'm doing match reports and also the odd feature as well. So, yeah, you can catch me there.
I say, well, make sure, Rank Squad, you go out and give Luke a follow after that wonderful bit of analysis on here. Luke, thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much to both Luke and Peter for their insights on all things French football. Make sure you give both of them a follow over on Twitter, or X if you prefer these days. I've been Jack Collins. This has been your Ligue 1 preview show here on Ranks FC. We're going to be back later in the week talking the Premier League on Wednesday's main episode, the standard timing of that episode. And then later in the week, Thursday or Friday, looking at the Bundesliga as well before we head to Italy to round this off next week with Serie A. Thank you so much for listening as ever. If you want more from Ranks FC, please do have a look in the description for a link to our Patreon, where we do a Monday post box and a Thursday, Friday think tank every week, talking about all the bits and bobs that you want to hear about in football. You can ask those questions as members of the community, and we do our best to get round to as much of it as we possibly can. There's also a brilliant Discord community in there as well. But for now, I'll see you on Wednesday. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.